After leaving the present material body, such an enlightened soul is admitted into the spiritual realm of the Lord and engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Therefore, the more we hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord, as they are stated in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the more we can know about His transcendental nature and thus make definite progress on the path back to Godhead. All right, so I haven't given class for 100 years, 108 years. So please bear with me if I stutter, and I hope by the mercy of all the Vaishnavas, those in the temple room of the manor and those viewing online, I'll be able to say something meaningful and pleasing to all of you. This is a very wonderful chapter which glorifies the process of hearing of Krishna Katha. Actually, this is the main thing, the main theme in all of Prabhupada's books, and he repeatedly speaks about this in many, many, many places. And the reason for this repetition is that this is actually the most essential part of our philosophy, because the process of Krishna consciousness fully depends on this hearing of Krishna Katha. So here we have an instance of the sages of Naimisharanya, who, as most of you probably remember, were gathered in the forest of Naimisharanya in order to perform a sacrifice to invoke auspiciousness for the age of Kali, which is a very difficult period. From all the four ages, Kali Yuga is the most difficult one in terms of practice of spirituality, and the godly qualities are diminished quite significantly. So the sages, being concerned about the welfare of the human beings, actually of the all living beings, in the age of Kali, they gathered and performed a 1,000-year sacrifice. Now, this sacrifice, of course, had the element of ritualistic performances, as of offering oblations in the fire, as it's done in Vedic time, especially. But the main function of this yagya was the hearing process. So the sages had been gathered in Naimisharanya, and initially they have chosen the speaker to address them, and that was initially was Romaharshan Sutta. Romaharshan Sutta was a very learned personality, and he was expert in reciting the, especially the Puranas. And as it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, Romaharshan Sutta, when Lord Balaram came to the same place, to Naimisharanya on his tour, he wanted to avoid taking part in the Kurukshetra battle. So Lord Balarama started a pilgrimage, touring all the different holy places of India, where he honored the different incarnations of himself, and he finally came to the forest of Naimisharanya. And when he appeared, naturally, all the great rishis and munis who were gathered there, they offered him respect by standing up and recognizing his presence. And unfortunately, the speaker, Romaharshan Sutta, he hesitated to do the same, and he did not properly honor the appearance of Lord Balaram on the stage, on the scene. And therefore, Lord Balarama decided to first of all teach everyone else, and of course teach him as well, that this is not appropriate behavior. So Lord Balarama took the life of that sage in order to punish him for his offense. And it wasn't that Lord Balaram was particularly so keen on killing him, but he wanted to teach the whole world that Balaram, who is the original guru, as Lord Nityananda as well, must be always respected properly. And therefore, he decided to show the world how important it is to honor the spiritual master. So he took one kusha grass straw and severed the head of Romaharshan Sutta. This was an amazing act. Only the Lord can kill someone with a small piece of grass. So he effortlessly took the life of Romaharshan Sutta. And then the sages, they wanted to... They did not criticize the Lord for his act, but they wanted to... Induce the Lord to exhibit his supremacy and his transcendental nature, and asked him to do something contradictory. They said that they were happy with him taking the life of Romaharshan Sutta, but simultaneously they wanted Lord Balaram to make sure that he continues speaking. So that was a kind of contradictory, because they didn't want to interrupt the performance of their sacrifice. So Lord Balarama resolved this very easily by appointing the son of Romaharshan Sutta, whom, as you know well, is Sutta Goswami, who's being addressed here. And Sutta Goswami, in that sense, because he was the son of Romaharshan Sutta, he represent his father. So he is, in one sense, as if his father continued speaking through him. So in that way, Lord Balaram restored the life of Romaharshan Sutta in one sense, and the sages continued listening the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam through the mouth of Sutta Goswami. So Sutta Goswami was a very extraordinary person, as is described in the Bhagavatam. He's revered as a great personality as well, and he had the necessary qualification to address all the sages. He had very humble attitude, and he was especially qualified to address the sages because he had heard himself from the mouth of Shukadev Goswami the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the beautiful description of the personality of Godhead. So Suta Goswami was narrating the Srimad Bhagavatam, which he heard from Shukadev Goswami when he was addressing Maharaj Parikshit on the bank of the Ganges. And now he was narrating the same Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages of Naimisharanya. Excuse me. So here the sages, being very pleased with what they've heard so far, they wanted to encourage Suta Goswami to continue speaking on the transcendental topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. And they addressed Suta Goswami in this wonderful way. So here in the verse itself, they address Suta Goswami as Saumya. And Saumya is a Sanskrit word which means grave. So Suta Goswami was a very grave sage. And the way I understand the word grave is that he was very thoughtful and contemplating always the messages of the scriptures. He was always contemplating. A sage is someone who contemplates a lot the meaning of the messages of the Vedas. And that is illustrated in many, many places in our scriptures. One very good example of that is when devotees, I think it was Advaitacharya, if I'm not wrong, who wanted to understand the meaning of one verse. And when sages study the Vedic scriptures, they don't just read and read and read tons of information. They're not so keen on having a lot of information, but they're more interested in actually having transformation. So having an information is something that is very particular for our age of Kali. We are bombarded with so much information, actually. The internet is full of information, the media, all the media. We get daily so much information. Facebook, YouTube, you name it, so many newspapers, television, radio. So much information is always blasted to everyone. But the problem is that information doesn't lead, most of the time, doesn't lead to any transformation. Whereas the sages of bygone ages, they were very interested in cultivating spiritual qualities, in cultivating spiritual knowledge and understanding. Therefore, they were focused on the Vedic scriptures, and they were particularly interested in being able to understand the texts and to realize the texts. So in that particular instance, Advaitacharya, he decided to fast because he couldn't understand one particular section. It is a pastime. And so he decided to fast. And whilst fasting, of course, he was contemplating and trying to understand. So before we understand something, we should not move on, in one sense. And the great sages, they like to regurgitate, as we say. We should be like the cows. The cows eat a lot of grass every day. But once they finish grazing, they you know, customary cows, they sit down and then they start to regurgitate. They, in one sense, you could say they vomit what they've consumed as grass, and they continue chewing on it. So like that, sages, they have this great quality to be like cows. They get some information and then they start trying to assimilate. So Sutta Goswami was a very great person, and he was constantly engaged in that same process of contemplating and trying to ponder over the transcendental knowledge. So that's why he's addressed here as grave and thoughtful. So the sages, they requested Sutta Goswami. First of all, they addressed him as grave, and then they gave him a blessing. So the blessing was, they said two things. One was, may you live many years. This is also related to the prelude to his becoming the speaker, because his father did not live very long. His life was taken by Balaram. So they didn't want that to happen again. They didn't want to lose again their speaker, so they addressed him and said, may you live a long life. Simply because they wanted to hear him speak continuously, the Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, if you imagine if that sacrifice was to continue 1,000 years, he did need to have a long life to participate. And also, they said to him, and may you have eternal fame. So that's very significant. Why did the sages want Sutta Goswami to have eternal fame? Simply because he was engaged in speaking the nectar of Krishna Katha. And that is what everyone should be able to hear in the future. They were concerned about the future, that this knowledge continues to be transmitted. So by saying that his fame should be eternal, they meant that the conversation that took place in the forest of Naimisharanya should be glorified for many, many ages to come, for a long period, eternally, actually. And in fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam is eternally transmitted. We know that in the heavenly planets, for example, they have many more cantos. We have only 18 cantos, but in the heavenly planets, there's so many more cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, simply because they have access to more of the Lord's pastimes. The Lord's pastimes are continuous. Krishna has so many incarnations, and the Srimad Bhagavatam, apparently in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the demigods have access to, has more pastimes describing the activities of the Lord. So the sages addressed him, Sutta Goswami, in that way. They gave him these blessings. And why were they so keen on giving him these blessings? Because they were very pleased by the fact that he was engaged in speaking about the activities of Lord Krishna. He was describing the transcendental activities of Sri Krishna, his qualities, his pastimes and his instructions. So the Shastra is full of descriptions of the glories of the Lord, description of the glories of the Lord, the Lord's devotees, and the instructions given by the Lord and his devotees. So the sages were very pleased with the way Sutta Goswami was describing these transcendental topics. And Prabhupada starts the purport by saying that when we hear about the transcendental qualities and activities of the personality of Godhead, we may always remember what has been spoken by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita 4.9. That is the famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. The Lord says about himself that his birth and activities, Janma and Karma, are Divyam. And Divyam means transcendental. So that means, Prabhupada continues on in the purport, that the Lord, although the Lord appears in front of our eyes, or when he appears in his incarnations, the human beings can perceive him, they can see him. He makes himself visible to the eyes of ordinary people, but his activities, although he mixes with everyone else, are not the same quality. And also, his appearance is of a transcendental quality, means that he is not like an ordinary being. This is a mistake which many people make. Even during his appearance as Krishna 5,000 years ago, it is described that not many people knew about his transcendental nature. Many people conceived of him in different ways, and that's very nicely described in the pastime of the Lord taking part in that wrestling match organized in Mathura by King Kansa. It's very nicely described in this pastime how everyone in the audience was seeing the Lord in a different way. But I have heard that only about, not many people were actually aware of the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. And of course, we know that the residents of Vrindavan, they perceive the Lord as their dearmost, and this is how we would like to also develop that consciousness, following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, to see the Lord as our supreme object of love. So the Lord's activities are very difficult to understand, and it is only possible to understand these activities by the mercy of the devotees of the Lord or the Lord himself. So therefore, we have been given these transcendental messages of Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So the process of hearing about Krishna, as we mentioned in the beginning of the class, is essential, hearing and chanting. From all the different processes of devotional service, most stress is given to the hearing and chanting, the Shravanam and Kirtanam. Actually, these two processes are the basis of all the other process of devotional service. And I'll give one example. For example, we, as those who are brahminically initiated, and even those who are not, they have this wonderful opportunity of performing some services for the deities. And at least my experience and my realization is that when I was at one point in my devotional life, I was engaged as a full-time pujari. And of course, now I am engaged as full-time pujari of my deities at home. But I was engaged how many hours a day? Let me think. So I would go to bed around 10 o'clock in the night and wake up around 3 o'clock. So that was for about 6 months continuous. And so this is how many hours? About 6 hours of the day I was taking rest. During the day I would take one more hour. And so 6 hours, and that's leaving 18 hours. So 18 hours a day I was engaged in some way of serving. Even the sleeping hours, they were also service, because I was allowing my body to take rest and be able to do the service. And so that's very wonderful way of engaging. But I realized during that period that the most important service actually during the day, during those 18 hours when I'm not asleep, was the process of hearing. So during those times, I was constantly hearing to lectures, kirtans, and like that, because this makes enables us, the process of hearing especially, to absorb ourselves in thoughts of the Lord. Because when we perform these various activities of deity worship, oftentimes our mind can carry us away, and so we end up thinking of something else. For example, you may be on the altar doing arati and thinking of something completely obscure, something completely different. And I will admit that in the beginning, when I was getting trained for the deity worship, I was so concerned about following all the different procedures, how many circles I should make, not to forget so many different details about the worship, addressing the deities, establishing the paraphernalia, so many complicated procedures. So when doing all these things, I at one point realize that I'm just being absorbed in all these rituals and details about the worship, the process of worship. And what struck me was that as I was doing the arati and thinking of how many times should I wave the chamara or offer the ghilap like that, making the circles, you know, when you do the worship in offering this paraphernalia, at one point I realized, my goodness, Krishna is on the altar and he's a person. So I was so struck by that. And then I realized that during that time, the more we hear about the Lord, even whilst performing the service of the deities, the more we start to relate to the deities in a personal way. And we can remember the Lord whilst performing all the different activities like cooking. There was so much cooking, washing paraphernalia and cleaning, and so many activities related to deity worship. So similarly, not only with worshipping the deities, but with any type of service, if we keep our minds absorbed in the process of hearing, and of course chanting is very important, it's as important actually, but first we have to hear. Before we can chant, we need to hear. And we, you know that the chanting of, for example, the chanting of the Holy Name, initially we didn't hear the Holy Name, so at one point someone gave us the Holy Names, we heard the Holy Name. And when we receive initiation, we also receive the Holy Name from our spiritual master in Guru Parampara. So hearing and chanting, that's so essential in our process of Krishna consciousness, and looking at the life of the resident of Vrindavan, Krishna book describes in so many places how the Vrajabasis, whilst being engaged in different activities, they were constantly engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord and absorbed in thoughts of the Lord. Like one example I can give is when Mother Yashoda was engaged in churning the butter in that pastimes of Damodar, she was singing the glories of the Lord. And also the residents of Vrindavan, especially when they were feeling separation, because in Vrindavan Krishna spends the days with his boyfriends, with the gopas, being in the pasturing grounds of Vrindavan. And in the night he spends times with his girlfriends. These are the gopis. So when he is with the gopas during the day, the gopis are feeling great separation because he's playing with all the coward boys in the pasturing grounds in the forests of Vrindavan. So the gopis are feeling great emotions of separation. And in the night, when he pretends to go to sleep, but we know he actually sleeps out from his house and goes again in the forests of Vrindavan, but this time with the gopis, then the coward boys, they're not with him in that sense, physically, and they feel great separation. So like that, during the night, the coward boys are feeling great emotions of separation, and during the day, the gopis. So like that. And during those times when they are separated from Krishna, of course, we know that for a pure devotee, there's never separation. They're always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, which are as good as being with Krishna. So during those times, they, like for example, the gopis, they engaged in talking about Krishna whilst performing their daily activities, and they're singing his glories and like that. And the gopas, at night, they dream about Krishna, and in their separation, they're still engaged in hearing and chanting his glories. So the process of hearing and chanting, Prabhupada emphasizes that so many times in so many places, and here also, in the purport, he says, in today's verse purport, he says, therefore, the more we hear, and why is therefore, one who understands the fact, let me see, okay. So, one who understands the fact, the Katakasa. So we should understand about the Lord's transcendental activities and nature. And this is possible through the process of hearing and chanting. And Prabhupada says that, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, such acts are called divyam. This means that he does not act or take his birth like an ordinary living being. So, and then later on in the purport, he explains how this could be understood. So it says, therefore, the more we hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord, as they're stated in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the more we can know about his transcendental nature and thus make definite progress on the path back to Godhead. So this is actually how we can understand those pastimes of the Lord, the nature of his appearance and activities. This is only possible through the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. And that should be done in the association of devotees. There's a very famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto. You probably have heard it many times quoted. That's 3:25:25. Satam prasangam mamavirya sambido bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katha. Tat joshanat asvapavarga vartmani shradaratir bhaktir anukramishyati. So in this verse it is said that in the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. But by cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begins. So again, as I was saying, when I was performing deity worship, I was just absorbed in the beginning about all the different details of the procedures, but I realized that the more I hear about the Lord, the more I can be absorbed. And then this is actually how we absorb ourselves. So as devotees in ISKCON, Prabhupada actually said many times that the reason why he created this Society for Krishna Consciousness, this movement, ISKCON, is to give opportunities to devotees to hear together about Krishna, to chant and hear together. This is the main reason why he wanted to create this movement. And you know, in the beginning, when Prabhupada was still in India and meditating on executing the order of his spiritual master, he tried to form a movement in India. In Lilamrita is described, he started the Jhansi League of Devotees. And if you read in Lilamrita, it's described what his plan was for the League of Devotees, and the devotees were supposed to be engaged practically 24 hours a day in sadhana, and which included mostly hearing and chanting. So Prabhupada had this idea that he wanted to create a society of Vaishnavas who are constantly engaged in hearing and chanting, in performing other services as well, and in spreading the glories of Krishna consciousness, of Lord Chaitanya, of spreading the movement of Lord Chaitanya. So this is how we should understand the ISKCON was conceived, with that idea that we are engaged in this process. And in the purport of today's verse, again, I will refer to that. He says that the more we hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord, as they're stated in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the more we can know about the transcendental nature, and thus make definite progress on the path back to Godhead. So, and that should be done in prasangam. Prasanga means association. And Prabhupada explains, let me see if I can find this quote. Satam prasangam, here's the quote. So those who are initiated now, your path is now open to Krishna's abode. Satam prasanga. By association of devotees, satam means devotees. Sat means that exists eternally. Is called Sat. Krishna is Sat. Om Tat Sat. So devotees are also Sat. So satam prasangam, by association. Prasanga means very intimate association. Sangha means association, and pra means still elevated or intimate association. Krishna's words, Krishna's teaching, Krishna's topics, they become very palatable in the association of devotees. In the association of non-devotees, one cannot understand Krishna, neither it becomes very palatable. So, like that, this is a nice quote which speaks about that. And so, therefore, the emphasis is given that we should hear the Bhagavad Gita and messages of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, but that should be done in the prasangam, or satsanga, in the association of devotees. So, therefore, it's so important that when we engaged in all our activities related to the spreading of Krishna consciousness, we should always keep in mind that that's the main goal, actually. All these activities are meant to increase the Sangha, to increase the volumes of devotees who are engaged in that process of glorifying the transcendental pastimes, activities, qualities, instructions of the Lord. And I was listening recently, many of you might have also listened, there were memories about His Holiness Gaur Govinda Maharaj, because it was his disappearance memorial, 25 years since he disappeared, and many devotees were glorifying him in a wonderful way. This is still available on the internet, especially in Madhavananda Prabhu's Facebook, because he organized that. And it was amazing how he was also stressing the importance, and I was listening to glorification by Niranjan Swami and His Holiness Giriraj Swami, and they were both saying that Niranjan Swami, especially in his offering, he was saying that he understood from Maharaj in one meeting. He had only one meeting of 2 hours with Maharaj, and he understood how important it is to simultaneously, Prabhupada's movement has two aspects. One is the movement, and the institution with all the different activities, and the other one is the mission. So both of them are very important, but of course that which is the essence is the mission, because that gives meaning to all the other activities that we perform in the movement. Like so many things, maintaining the tempo, distributing books and all that. This is all actually meant to push on the mission. And the mission is, what is our mission? Our mission is the mission of Lord Chaitanya, the mission of Guru Parampara. It's to, and he said that the mission is to have as many more devotees join the Sangha, the Sankirtan movement, and be able to go back to Godhead. This is why Lord Chaitanya came. This is why all the incarnations of Krishna come. They come to enable us, the conditioned living entities, to be absorbed in the process of Shravanam and Kirtanam, and ultimately rejoin the transcendental pastimes of the Lord in the spiritual world, in Golok Vrindavan. So this is the meaning of our movement. This is the goal of our movement. And by participating in this wonderful activity of Sankirtan, we're actually trying to bring as many living entities who are rotting in this material world to the fold of Srila Prabhupada, to the fold of Lord Chaitanya, and we all together go back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. So this is the conclusion of my talk today, and if there's anyone wants to ask a question or any comments by the devotees.
Thank you so much, Bhagadas Prabhu, for an amazing class and taking us on to the nectarian pastimes of the Lord, as well as Balaram, Lord Balaram, our Adi Guru. How you started the class with Roma Harsha Sutta, and how Lord Balaram was teaching us about the spiritual master's nature and Adi Guru's nature, and how he appointed Sutta Goswami in that state, and then obviously giving us the knowledge that, you know, when the Lord does something, he does something for the ultimate good for of everyone. Very nice class. Also, you touched about Advaita Acharya, how he decided to fast. That was quite an eye-opening. how the sages actually blessed him, Sutta Goswami for a long life and eternal fame, which we are still to this day talking about and relishing in these pastimes. We also talked about how the Srimad Bhagavatam, although we only have cantos, 18 cantos here in the in the heavenly planets, they have many, many more, and you know, the pastimes are the... So I wanted to actually understand this as to how come the demigods, you know, although having all of this knowledge, they don't perhaps have that opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead, perhaps.
Oh, many of them do go back to Godhead. It's wrong to think that they don't. But many of the demigods are actually pious living entities who become promoted to the heavenly planets because they desire to enjoy material opulence and like that. But of course, the good thing about the heavenly planets also is that there's a lot of Sankirtan going on there as well. However, it is said that in the heavenly planets, the sense gratification is of a very high standard, and there's hardly any suffering. Actually, we here suffer so much. We have mixed suffering and happiness here in the Martyaloka. In the middle earthly planets where the karma is being accumulated. In the heavenly planets, no one accumulates karma. They just live up, you know, they enjoy their good, pious deeds. And in the hellish planets also, there's no karma being made, only here and by the human beings. So Therefore, because the heavenly planets, the living entities, enjoying their pious credits and like that, so sometimes it's not difficult to forget. And we know this, like we know the story of the Yamala Arjuna trees who were in the previous life, they were demigods. You know, they were absorbed in drinking and enjoying the society girls and like that. So that's possible also to become diverted. Therefore, demigods are praying that they want to take birth, especially in this Kali Yuga, to participate in the Lord Chaitanya's movement. Because as we mentioned in the class earlier, that this is a very rare opportunity to actually return to the spiritual world, to rejoin the pastimes of the Lord in the spiritual world. So therefore, even though they may have so many different cantos, I suppose because there's so much material opulence and one can very easily become bewildered by that as well. So like that, it is very easy. So therefore, the association of Vaishnavas, whether you are in hell or you're in heavenly planets or in the earthly planets, is so essential that satam prasangam, this should be our only goal in life, to always be in the association of devotees where we can hear and chant the glories of the Lord. This is our blessing.
So nice. Yes, so nice to hear that there is Sankirtan movement happening also in the heavenly planets, and you know, there's the relishing nectarian of the Sankirtan movement there also, in the association of all the devotees. And you stressed on this importance of Shravanam and Kirtanam, and how it is essential for us to improve these capabilities. These are so most important capabilities. So obviously, as we have a variety of devotees who are joining these classes, some are new, some are somewhat established in their Krishna consciousness, we often get questions sometimes that are, you know, fairly new questions, like, okay, we know we ought to do chanting and we ought to do kirtan and hearing. Can these aspects be done together? That's one of the questions that have come in on the chat, on the Zoom call here. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that. I know that we say, obviously, we do japa together because that's our conversations, personal conversation with Krishna in isolation, in a meditative mood, in a more prayerful mood. The question is, do you mean, can we do chanting and hearing together, as it were?
Yes, very good question. So, yeah, of course, this is the goal, actually, as I mentioned, this is the goal of our movement. Unfortunately, we are forced at the moment to be separated from each other, due to the world situation with COVID, and many of us are physically not able to be together, to spend time together. But luckily, there's this facility of internet which allows us to, even though we are physically separated, we still can be together and have a conversation and like that. So it is very much important, especially for people who are in a family situation, that they perform these activities of hearing and chanting together. In Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to verses, in the 13th chapter, verses from 8 to 12, there's one purport to all these verses. It's a section of verses. Prabhupada explains very nicely that it's very important for a happy family life that we engage in four activities. So this is chanting the holy names together. That means in the morning or whenever the family finds time to come together, they should chant the holy name together, either in kirtan or japa. Kirtan means singing the Lord's holy names, the songs of the Vaishnavas, or chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra together once prescribed rounds, or even kirtan, performing kirtan with chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And then that's one activity that we should perform together. Another is take prasadam together, cook for the Lord and take prasadam, worship the deities. Again, that should be done together. Look at the temple life. Temple life is centered around deity worship, which means you are engaged. Everyone in the temple is engaged. And the resident devotees will agree with that most of them have some services to the deities throughout. Actually, everyone, as everything in the temple is centered around the service of the deities. So similarly, in our house, in our home, those who live not in the temple but outside, the family should be centered, all the activities in the family should be centered around the worship of the home deity or the family deity. And another thing is then the devotees should, the family members should hear and chant together the Srimad Bhagavatam. They should daily meet and discuss in each other's association, the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada gave the sandwich program. He established that for the temple, but we should have temple in our home. So in the morning, we should hear from Srimad Bhagavatam like we do at the moment. And in the evening, we should also come again together and discuss Krishna's words from the Bhagavad Gita. So these four activities, chanting the holy names and chanting, doing kirtan, performing deity worship, taking prasadam together and discussing our scripture, the Srimad Bhagavatam. These are very potent processes and we can all perform them together. And this is what's happening in the movement, in the temples as well, in the ISKCON temples. We're coming together to take prasadam together. We're coming together to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, we're coming together to worship the deities and also to chant the holy name. So these are very potent processes. And of course, chanting can be done together. And at the moment, as I said, it's very difficult. But even with the lockdown being still present, devotees go out and like they do harinams. Like for the festivals especially, I heard that they had a harinam, beautiful harinam. I saw even some video. Devotees chanting on the streets of Watford town, performing sankirtans. And of course, it was a bit weird because normally we dance together, we kind of form a nice group. This time the harinam was like everyone was 2 meters distance from each other. But we're still together, even with that small distance of 2 meters. And chanting together, that's very powerful. The more people come together and do this together simultaneously, the more potent that process becomes of chanting and hearing, the more potency, the more the Lord becomes present and his potency manifests more vividly, more tangibly.
Wow, amazing. Thank you so much.